Hi, K-Watchers. It's Leanne.
Hi, everyone. It's Juliet. Welcome to the K-Watch Party.
Today, we are doing our first movie. We will be covering Wonderland, a star-studded Korean film released this year that ponders themes of loss, longing, and the ethical implications of creating virtual realities to cope with death and grief. You know, easy, light fare that we're used to. Let's dive in. Good afternoon, Juliet. How are you?
I'm great. I'm just getting through summer. I'm trudging along, trying to get to the end of August.
And then, guys, the end of August is going to come. She's like, just getting through. School started. Got to just get through to Christmas.
Just surviving is my MO. How are you?
I am good. We have been reunited. I was down in LA this last week visiting my family. And where my parents live, it is always 98 degrees. Yeah. And so it was rough. Like, I am just so Bay Area soft now. Like, there's California soft and then there's Bay Area soft, because we have our
hottest days. And this is actually quite niche to where we live, because there are parts of the Bay Area that are very hot. But where we live, it gets like high 80s. A 90 day is like unheard of. People are
freaking out.
Yeah, they're freaking out. There are news articles about it, you know? So when it hits about 75, we're all dying. We're sweating.
We are schwitzing out of our clothes. Yeah, we don't like it.
Anything fun that happened while you were down there?
We were there for very short, and during weekdays, I have a lot of old high school friends who still live near where my parents live, like where we grew up. And there's so many children now, and it's so hot, and there's just too many people to wrangle that I am actually, when I go down, I'm actually kind of a hermit. I don't like tell anybody I'm going down anymore. We just kind of do family things and then make our way back home. So yeah, if any of these old friends are listening, I apologize. I'm just like, don't think I'm ignoring you. I just become a hermit when I get back there.
I am the same way. Some of it I think is because I'm so hot. Yes. I just don't want to move, think, arrange anything. So I'm always like, I can't. And my parents live on the southern side of Southern California. So I'm always like, I can't leave this place.
Yeah, it's too hot.
It's too hot.
We did go to a Dodger game, which was super fun. And we also went to the Hollywood Bowl. So it was my girls' first times at both of those venues. And it was really nice.
Who did you see at the Hollywood Bowl?
We actually saw, you would have loved it. It was just random because we just wanted to go. It was the LA Philharmonic, and they were showcasing three Koreans, actually. So it was like Korea Pride Night over there. There were so many tables of Haimonis.
Yeah.
So at the Hollywood Bowl, you go, like the whole scene of it, you bring your dinner.
Yes.
Like a picnic situation. You bring your wine. Everybody else, like, you know, they bring their food. It's all kind of spread out. We got our bottles of wine. The Koreans,
Do they bring like a straight up barbecue grill?
No, they were very classy.
Okay.
Because they actually had table linens.
Oh, wow.
Like a tablecloth. Like multiple tables of Koreans had that. They just take everything to the next level. Like maybe a little bit extra. To me, I'm like, that's such an extra step. That's so unnecessary. But I feel like you guys are just like, no, we need to like do this right and be oba and extra about it.
There's something to it that indicates classiness, or because it's such a classist society too, I think there is this idea that you do these things and you're showing other people that you are elevated. You know, so like at home, if you have food that is in a container, I was always taught you have to put it into a bowl, you know, like to present it well. And my mom is really big on how that looks to other people. Like, you know, you show up and you look like you're educated, or like you come from a family
that puts things in
that bowls. Puts effort into things.
Well, that's how I got in trouble when I first hosted my mother-in-law. I put hummus out in its container. and the skies rumbled.
Yeah, I mean, good. Your husband's ancestors were rolling in their grave. Have you been watching the Olympics?
Yes. The Olympics have been gripping.
Oh my gosh. I mean, we
Korea
could do
winning
whole,
some medals.
We could do a whole podcast on the Olympics. I saw an article about the female pistol shooter. Is that what it was?
Yes, the Korean one. Mm-hmm.
Her name is Kim Yeji, and she looks so cool, like almost kind of avant-garde.
Well, she looks like almost like Matrixy. She kind of was wearing a hat. She holds her pistol in like kind of a cool guy
way. Yeah, very
way.
Like one-handed.
Yeah, like very NWA gangster style.
Yeah, like you're on your knees. She's about to...
Yeah, execution style. Yeah. No, she is super cool.
Yeah, she's got cool shoes on. And then on top of all of that like cool gear, she has a cute little stuffy plushy thing attached to her, I don't know, belt loop or something, because her daughter gave it to her. It was very, just a cool,
very heartwarming,
cool lady.
And archery too. There's something about Koreans and precise targets.
I wonder... Well, I was going to say... I have a theory, but then I realized I caught myself because that... can't be true. But what I was going to say is there is some theories that Koreans are really good at like precise things because of their chopstick skills, because we've been trained to use chopsticks at a very young age. And with that comes a lot of resilience, because there's a lot of failure involved until you get it right.
I think, you know, all of us generationally have used chopsticks. But I think Koreans use the metal chopsticks.
Mm.
And they're really heavy and right. thin. They almost make it harder to yes. pick things up.
Right.
Again, Koreans making it harder on themselves. That I think that's what it is. It's these steel metal chopsticks that you guys use.
But then what did the Chinese use back?
It's like bamboo and wood.
Oh, I see.
I saw a bronze medalist in, I think, the 400 meter freestyle men's. Maybe the first one. I had seen that it might have been the first one for a long time. It could be since Beijing.
Since Park Tae-won, who is a guy who did a cameo in Lovely Runner, he swept the nation. So I have been shocked that there weren't any subsequent swimmers since then.
He didn't start the trend.
You would think like people would feel really enthused about swimming.
I don't think it's as easy as, oh, now I want to be a swimmer and I'm going to go to the Olympics and win a gold medal.
Well, that's kind of what happened with golf. No, Park City was like the original. She's from like, she's Korean. And so then the nation went crazy about golf.
Yes.
Because they saw one of their own killing it.
Oh, I watch LPGA because it's like I'm forced to on TV at my house. And all the top 10 are always Korean women.
Yeah.
You know, for how attractive these drama Korean women are,
I mean,
if you need a dose of cold water reality of what people in Korea look like, just watch the LPGA.
Yep.
There are no
they're
Kim
not
Ji-wons
doing plastic
there.
Surgery. They're too busy.
But they're also not taking Ozempic. Is that a nice thing to say? But they're definitely like,
They're
golfers,
thicker.
Yeah,
you gotta, like,
strong women.
Bulk up your legs.
So, yeah, okay, Korean kind of killing it, but, you know, USA also.
I mean, obviously. But you know what was really exciting to watch was the men's gymnastics.
Yes. Oh, my God,
I'm usually not into it, but, oh, my gosh, the men's USA gymnastics team is one full of heart.
Yes.
They love each other. They're so excited for each other, and they're very unique. It's like that one guy who only does the pommel horse.
Oh, my God. His name is Steven Nedersk. Nederskick.
He is
become an internet sensation.
Oh, really?
Yes, because...
with his glasses.
He wears glasses.
And so they're quite foggy.
And they're very smeared.
Yeah.
But the whole finals...
While the rest of his team is in competition.
Yeah. He's sitting around, leaning back, taking naps.
Yes.
He's like eyes closed.
Yes.
And then... he gets up and that guy just came to pommel. Like
He came to pommel.
He kills it on the pommel horse.
Also crazy that you could just go and be a part of the gymnastics team and do one event.
Right.
But I had so much fun watching them. Have you seen the men's Chinese swim team?
You know, I did clock one of them because they've been doing very well in the men's events.
Yes.
I did clock one of them and I was like, oh, he's quite good looking and has very nice teeth. I was very shocked.
Nice. That's a requirement. But they come out of the galley or whatever, and they all look so buff. They're broad shoulders. And girls on TikTok, or maybe moms on TikTok, are thirsting over these men.
Oh, I just looked up TikTok. Oh, man. They are really good looking. All of them.
I mean, I feel like Chinese men have not quite had their heyday yet.
No,
you
not,
know?
Not a
Korean
moment.
Korean men have kind of come and gone now. So now it's China's turn.
I mean, we've only had Yao Ming.
Oh, yeah. Who's basically an ogre.
Yeah. So we need more thirst traps, I think. And a lot of what the Olympics is about are these backstories.
Yeah.
My kid came home complaining yesterday from soccer camp because they made them play not on the turf, but on the grass. She comes home, she's like, "Mom, my feet hurt so bad. I can't even walk." She's just like butt scooting around the floor because she can't walk on her feet. Meanwhile, we're watching the Olympics, and it was just casually like a girl from South America like competing. She had to walk 7 miles every day to her gym.
Well, you know, these monsters that live in our home are the ones that we've created.
Yes, we are the only ones to blame for how soft they are. I mean, I'm so soft I can't even take 90 degree weather anymore, so I can't blame my kids. So the Olympics have been great. We're really proud of Korea and the U.S. One of the things that the Olympics always reminds us of is that there are certain things that robots cannot do.
Well, I guess arguably they could do these things, but I don't think that we'd be interested in watching it.
Nobody wants to watch a robot swim.
Yeah.
And so that takes us to the movie we are covering today. We are talking about Wonderland. This movie takes place in a maybe not so distant future. In this world, there is a company called Wonderland. They sell the ability to digitize a person's consciousness just before they die or fall into a coma. And so this story follows a few vignettes of people who are signed up for Wonderland, and we watch their journey navigating death, the afterlife, and grief.
Mm.
The movie was released in theaters in Korea this June. However, it was actually made in 2019, but was delayed because of the pandemic. Do you feel like this movie, after watching it, was made 4 years ago?
I think if it was released 4 years ago, it would have felt revolutionary. I think now in the current AI space, it feels a little bit almost dated.
Right.
Like, ho-hum. I wouldn't be shocked if this kind of service does come to the market. But 4 years ago, we weren't having the same conversations about AI. So I think this was a very innovative movie. Although I guess if you think about American films, there have been a few.
It's not a new genre.
Right.
Right. AI has been in the movie zeitgeist for a long time. It was 1968 with Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, Terminator, which we kind of referenced, yes, in Lovely Runner in our last recap, The Matrix.
Right.
Those were very doomsday, yeah, AI, right, scenarios.
Kind of dystopian.
Right. This one, it feels more like the movie Her.
Yes.
That came out more recently. Spike Jonze, Joaquin Phoenix. This is a whole recent kerfuffle around Scarlett Johansson and using,
oh my gosh, yeah,
her
using
voice.
Her voice, because mm-hmm, it's so sexy. Joaquin Phoenix in that movie falls in love with the AI who is voiced by Scarlett Johansson. Like, who wouldn't?
Yeah, I mean, turn that on.
Yeah.
I'll do anything with that voice.
This takes it up a notch.
Yeah.
Because there is something very intriguing about being able to encapsulate your loved one who has passed in an AI form that can kind of live on forever.
This one feels closer to Her because it is also very much about the emotional implications of what it means to have your loved one who's dead live on forever.
Right. Her, when it came out, I think was a little bit hard to relate to in some way. Like, I think some people thought of that as like freakish behavior to fall in love with a robot.
Right. But the inverse of it, right? It's, yeah, like back then it seemed so crazy. And now we're like, oh yeah, no, that's totally real. This movie, it feels a little actually aged. Like, it hasn't aged well because now we've seen too much. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen it. Like, AI has come. We tried the metaverse. It didn't work. This idea of everyone's just going to be in their goggles, stuck in another world, it hasn't come to fruition. It's kind of failed. And we kind of just use AI today, you know, to like draft up our text, right, messages and write our emails for us and like help us with our cover letters. Like, that's kind of what we're using it for. It's not what I think this world purports to be, which is your emotional lives are going to be wrapped up and controlled by AI.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts because I used to work at a company that did all of that AI stuff. I had to use that headset for work. It was so disturbing because you enter into a public space.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, anyone who's on at the same time, you encounter. And somebody just came up to me and was saying very sexual things. People were cursing.
Really?
And I am a grown woman, but I was so uncomfortable, I immediately shut it off. Getting that spewed in your face, because these people are avatars, so nobody really knows what you look like.
Yeah. It's bringing the worst of the internet into your physical space. Yeah. I can see why it failed. And it isn't our reality today so far. So while the movie touches on some pretty deep and heavy concepts, it actually seems to have flopped in Korea. It was released in June and it didn't do well in theaters and kind of went straight to VOD.
I wonder why.
I just, especially in a country like Korea where everything is so modern and technologically advanced, I just don't think this hits. I don't know. How did you feel about the film overall?
I thought it should have been a drama.
Oh, yes.
You know, right. If they did the vignettes in several episodes, I think that would have done really well because they could have gone very deep. And I think there were lots of themes that were really intriguing, but they touched on it so superficially that you never really got to connect with the characters. There were maybe one or two that you wanted to know more about, but they glossed over it. There were themes about AI that I think could have been very interesting. They would kind of throw it in your face and then that was it.
I know. I wanted so much more backstory. A drama would have been excellent.
Yeah. But I think overall as a film, it was thought-provoking.
Yeah.
I would say, actually, I watched it late in the evening. And then when I woke up in the morning, I felt like I was dreaming about it.
Oh, interesting.
Because there were a lot of things that I wanted to know more about. There were a lot of things that left an impression.
And that's a sign of a movie that has moved you in some way.
The cast was amazing. I think the cinematography was beautiful. But I'm not a theater buff by any means, but I wish that there was more.
Yeah. It is shocking that it was a flop because this is quite the star-studded cast. This is top-tier A-list people in this film. We have at the top of the call sheet, even though he doesn't have as many minutes as everyone else, he's the one everyone came for, Gong Yoo.
I know you really like him.
I was going to say, does this man need an introduction?
I know who he is.
Oh my God.
But I actually don't even really know what he was in.
He's one of South Korea's most beloved actors. He's from Goblin. I think he's best known from Goblin. He was in Squid Game, Train to Busan.
Yes.
Right. Okay. He's major. And his English is excellent. His Mandarin is very good too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. But his English, I was shocked. There was no accent. It was. I almost thought it was like AI dubbed.
Well, I was going to say the English was so good, but it felt robotic a bit.
It felt a little AI. But I think that's true because he is AI in this movie.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe that's his whole.
Yeah, effort. I think there was some misunderstanding and confusion about who he was.
Yes,
like
exactly.
On the internet, people were like, was he? Some thought he was Bailey's husband.
That was my big what's up with.
Yeah.
We always have to have a what's up with Gong Yoo's character in this film. Like, who exactly is he? It felt like he knew her well. But then it seems like the movie was positioning him like he was just another AI.
He's like a helper.
Caretaker.
Right. Yeah. And when he showed her his ID, his contact info, it said psychotherapist.
Okay.
So maybe he's just there to like counsel people who are struggling in the AI world.
Huh. So that's Gong Yoo. Next in terms of like who I know is Jung Yumi. She is probably, I think, most recognizable to most people from Train to Busan. But she's been in a lot of dramas. Mm.
And she was in that with Gong Yoo.
Yeah. So actually this is the fourth movie she's done with Gong Yoo.
Oh, wow.
They did a movie years ago called Silence. They've done Train to Busan. They've done the feminist film Kim Ji-young, Born 1982.
Yes. But that was a very dark movie. But she was good in it. She was very good.
Yeah. And they play a married couple in that. And then this is their fourth movie together.
But you also know her well because you love to watch Yoon's Kitchen.
I do. There is a variety show called Yoon's Kitchen that has now had multiple spinoffs. If you guys haven't watched it, they have these top tier celebrities, including V from BTS, Choi Woo-shik, who's also in this film, Jung Yoo-mi, Park Seo-jun, and then two more famous Korean actors that like I don't know very well. They go to these remote locales and open up a eatery and then have to like run it. And they're just in the back like frying chicken. It's actually kind of boring, but also very soothing to watch.
Yeah, it is so boring. Where do you watch it?
Ginny's Kitchen, which is one of the spinoffs, is on Prime. So you guys can catch it on Prime.
Choi Woo-shik is also most well known for Parasite.
He and Jung Yoo-mi are together playing Wonderland employees in this film. Choi Woo-shik, I know him also because he's in the Wooga squad with Park Seo-jun.
That's niche.
That's really niche. But if you like to see cute boys acting silly, on Disney Plus, the Wooga squad goes out on a vacation together and they stay in a house. It's called In the Soup.
Also boring, so boring.
But they're all so cute.
They are very cute.
He's also most recently was in Killer Paradox.
Aha, uh-huh, yes, I watched that. Very good. Highly recommend on Netflix. This is what I find interesting. I feel like the movies, the Korean movies that are on Netflix are not as good as the Korean dramas that go to Netflix.
Mm-hmm. But then there's a lot of crap on Netflix too. I mean, I was going to say, I've also seen him in Our Beloved Summer, which isn't crap, but it's a very mid drama. The next guy is Park Bo-gum. I'd maybe argue that he's more famous than all of them.
I think he has a lot more female stands than the rest of them. That's for sure.
Yeah. He was in Reply 1988, which I know you loved.
You know Choi Woo-shik's dad in this film?
Yeah.
He was Park Bo-gum's dad in Reply 1988.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, there's so many fun crossovers here. If you're like into K-dramas, then you'll know all of the connections.
He was also in Encounter, and he plays a younger lover to Song Hye-kyo's character, and I personally think that that movie led to the breakup of the Song-song marriage. Song Hye-kyo and Song Joong-ki, just look it up.
I think it's true. The lore is that Song Joong-ki has unfollowed Park Bo-gum. The internet is crazy. They will find out who you follow, who you've unfollowed, and apparently he doesn't follow him anymore, and they used to be best friends.
Yeah. So, and Song Hye-kyo has a history of falling in love with her male co-stars.
Ooh.
She dated Hyun Bin after they were in a movie together, and then she married Song Joong-ki after Descendants. So,
Yeah, there was a guy from many, many years ago that she dated, and he was like 10 years her senior too. Mm. So that's her MO.
Where there's smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Playing Park Bo-gum's partner in the film is Bae Suzy, also known as
Suji. I don't know much about her.
I watched her recently in Startup.
Yes,
and
I watched that too.
She's actually quite a good actress. You know, a lot of these singer idols turned actress.
Yes.
You're not really sure, but she's actually quite good, I thought. And she's just kind of like got a sweet face.
Yeah, she's got a very pretty face.
Easy to look at. She's dated Yi Min-ho and Yi Dong.
She did?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I used to love him too. But you know, there was this TikTok talking about the Korean celebrity middle age phenomenon where they all start to get puffy.
Oh.
Either because they finally start eating or maybe too much filler.
Too much ramen.
Yeah, too much ramen. Oh, on another note about ramen, there was footage captured at the Olympics of South Korean workers bringing like truckloads of ramen. Into the village. And the comments were like, how are they handling all this sodium? Truly, I don't get it. I never eat ramen, and when I do, I blow up.
Oh, my God. And I'm just thirsty the rest of the day.
Yeah, but how do Koreans, I feel like, just eat that every day?
Look, we all have to work hard to avoid the bloat, okay, in middle age. So we're not going to blame Yi Min-ho. The last major name is Tang Wei. She's a Chinese actress, apparently very famous in China.
So she's been in Chinese films?
Yes, and she, I think, was in a very racy one in the 2000s and like maybe kind of got canceled. And to get canceled by the Chinese government means you're like under house arrest. Like people don't hear from you. And so I think she had a little bit of that.
So then that's why she jumped over to the Korean side?
Exactly. Well, she found asylum with the director of this film named Kim Tae-yong. He directed her in a movie called Late Autumn. And so they got married. And so now...
Is this like the Nepo film or what?
Well, you know, because the trailers make it seem like it's a Park Bo-gum Suzy vehicle.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, like I feel like they really push the young love story. But Tang Wei is actually...
She's kind of the main character.
She has the most screen time.
Yeah.
That's nepotism right there.
Yeah.
And he clearly loves his wife's face because he just really focuses on her face. It's actually lovely to know that they're married. So all of these A-list names are coming together. We see a few storylines. Bai Li is the first woman we meet. That is Tang Wei. She's dying. She's setting up a Wonderland account so she can talk to her young daughter. And we hear from her that she doesn't want to know in her AI life that she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out she actually doesn't tell her daughter she's dead either. She just tells her daughter she's on a vacation. What is your long-term plan here, lady? You have to tell your daughter and this poor grandmother.
And you're putting your own mother, the grandmother, in such a difficult position. Because she's also making all these promises like, I'll be there soon.
Right.
Wait for me.
Because in her mind, in the AI's mind, she doesn't know she's dead.
Yes.
So she actually doesn't think she's lying. And the grandma's like, what the heck? She chooses to be an archaeologist in the desert searching for the tree of life. lots of loaded meanings there.
And then we have the second vignette, which is Suji. Her name is Jeongin in this film. She's dating Park Bo-gum. His name is Taeju. Taeju has fallen into a coma. We have no idea how.
Yeah.
But what we get in the first scene before we know that he's in a coma is that she gets a call from her boyfriend, Taeju, who is an astronaut. And he's telling her what time to get up. He's telling her what she needs to do for the day, what the weather is like.
Take your vitamins.
Yes. She's a flight attendant, so he will forecast for her what the weather is like in the city she's flying to. It's so sweet. And then you find out he's been in a coma, it seems like, for many years.
Yeah.
And so she's created this account to reach back to this person that she was in love with.
Right. And, you know, he's the ideal boyfriend. Because the AI, right, he is learning from her that these are the things that she wants from him.
Yes.
Be this constant companion. Be sweet.
Always cheerful.
Always cheerful. And so the AI is the perfect boyfriend. And she basically spends most of her, it seems like, free time talking to this robot on a screen.
And to the point where another guy asks her out. She calls him. She's living in this strange fantasy world.
The other big storyline follows the two Wonderland program managers. It's Jung Yumi's character and Choi Woo-shik's character. These two are basically Wonderland salespeople almost.
Mm-hmm.
They're pitching an afterlife to all of these grieving families, dying people. It feels gross, right? Like, I don't know. This storyline to me felt like most like an indictment of this. Company, right? Yes. I think the biggest story that we see this in is with the grandmother.
Right.
Do you recognize this grandmother?
No.
This grandmother just made you cry tears in Lovely Runner.
What?
This is the same grandmother.
Person?
This is the same grandmother. This is Time Travel High Money from Lovely Runner. She's the same actress.
What? Mm-hmm. I'm shooketh right now.
This grandma made you cry so much. Did she make you cry in this one?
I didn't cry.
She is a quite sad story. So this grandmother, her grandson has died. And so she has him in Wonderland. But the problem is you see the underbelly of what happens when you try to monetize grief.
Mm-hmm.
And because she's seeing her grandson and like through the guilt of, I don't know, whatever happened with her grandson or just being a grandmother, she is through the app, like buying him new clothes, buying him a car he wants for a piano. It's definitely like almost a darkest storyline because it's terrible. Like what they're milking from this old lady.
Yeah. And this was one of the storylines I wish they would have really delved into a little deeper, because you can see in these salespeople's eyes, mm-hmm. in Jung Yumi's character and Choi Woo-shik's character, that they're feeling uncomfortable about it. Even when they're selling it to her, they don't seem convinced.
Mm-hmm.
They present it to her, they kind of reluctantly set it up and call the grandson, but the grandmother is so moved.
Right.
Almost more than any other person in this film. She starts to believe mm-hmm. this is her grandson,
right?
Incarnate,
yeah.
You know? And so then as they see her spending all this money, overworking herself, getting another job, and ultimately that leads to her death.
Yeah.
There could have been so much that they could have explored there, but I thought it was a fascinating kind of red flag about what can happen when you start to immerse yourself in sim type worlds.
Right. Do you think she died, actually? I thought, so Jung Yumi calls the grandson and says, hey, actually, your grandmother just died today on her way to work. But I was wondering if she canceled them because she was trying to save the grandmother from killing herself with all these jobs for this ungrateful grandson.
Oh.
I don't know.
That would have been a very interesting twist.
Yeah. I think the monetization of this kind of thing, it can't ever go right. Like, interests are not aligned, right?
Yeah.
Like, this company just wants to make money.
Right.
You don't have Jung Yumi's, like, canceling accounts because their goals are real.
I mean, you know, we're talking about, like, just being part of a corporate capitalistic country and...
I mean, you literally work for a company that...
Everything.
Is doing this.
Yeah. Everything is about money. You know, and so I think that's why it felt so ugly and it felt, like, kind of uncomfortable to watch because they were providing this really beautiful service and the people... For the most part, I think really appreciated it. But then the company is monetizing on the grief, which I think feels very dirty.
Yeah. I think my big question was, is what they're doing ethical? And I think even they, the characters in the movie, aren't really sure. There's a few themes that really come out in the movie. I think one of them we kind of touched on with Bae Suzy is this addiction to the machine. Bae Suzy's character, she's clearly addicted to the AI. So in their story, she's been talking to fake Taeju for who knows how long. And the real Taeju, who she was waiting for, actually wakes up.
From his coma.
Yeah. And, you know, his lips are super chapped. I mean, look, Pak Bo-gum really looks dazed and confused.
Oh my gosh. The trailers make him look so beautiful. Contrast that to him, like, his hair is unkempt. I've never seen Pak Bo-gum look so unattractive.
I know, but he definitely looks like he was in a coma. And he comes out of a coma, he has maybe some brain damage, and he's not meeting her expectations because she has become so addicted to the fake boyfriend that she's created for herself. She's unhappy with the real Taeju that she's got in real life. This Taeju is doing unexpected things. I mean, this Taeju has evolved. This Taeju has changed as a person. Meanwhile, fake Taeju will never change as a person.
Yeah.
He will never evolve.
Right.
But that's the Taeju that she is easier to manage for her.
And that's another danger of the AI, right? You create the person that you want and you can't accept any flaws. And
because you have this fake version who has no flaws.
Right. I mean, I think that says a lot too about relationships. I think one of the themes here is that humanity and living in these relationships is about kind of the messiness and about the flaws and being able to accept people for the ups and downs. But we're kind of getting to a point in society where maybe you
can Band-Aid over it. You don't actually need to accept reality anymore because you can just create a fake
person. Or you can turn it off when you're done. Yeah. And there is, I think, maybe also a cautionary tale for people around the world, but also in Korea. I know that people are obsessed with gaming there. Mm-hmm. And there was a story many years ago about, well, you know, don't quote me on the details, but
We never do here.
But the parents were so obsessed with gaming to the point that their child died because they were just immersed.
Actually, I think South Korea is further along than us in this like AI virtual, because I know there is a virtual girl group and this entire girl group is just AI bots. They're just like very hyper realistic. Yeah. And they're just like machine learning, deep fake 3D bots.
Huh?
Yeah. They're called Maeve. And so like if you watch the videos of them on YouTube, I just pulled it up right now. They look so real. Of course, we cannot be seen in person. But if you have a device, you can communicate with us anywhere. That's literally what comes up on YouTube.
That's so creepy.
Really scary. But hey, if there's anybody a robot can impersonate and get away with, it's definitely a K-pop idol.
Oh my gosh, I just looked them up. They look so real.
So real. They look like NewJeans. In fact, I think NewJeans actually just looks like AI robots.
Right. I mean, they probably said, here's the kind of person I want to look like. Yeah. And then they got the work done.
Yeah, exactly. But at the end of their story, it appears that Bae Suzy chooses Pogum's character. And he's ready to walk away because he's like, oh, you clearly love this robot more than me. And he's walking away and she chases after him and she disconnects her service with him. So it does feel like, at least in this film, she chose the human over the robot.
Yeah.
So that is a nice part of the story. I definitely cried on that scene. You didn't cry.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I cried. I don't know. I think they did a really good job making me root for them and making me actually dislike the robot.
Mm, yeah. I disliked all of the robots by the end of it. Mm-hmm.
I think I could have dealt with Bailey's robot. So Bailey's robot, she basically becomes sentient at the end.
Yeah.
Right? Like that storyline, she actually starts off as just an AI version of her consciousness. But it really begs the question of like, what does the AI know? Can it learn emotions? And does it end up actually really feeling? And so Bailey chose not to know that she's dead in her simulation. But she can tell, the robot can tell, something's off with her mom.
Yeah.
She has weird dreams. Like there's something about this robot that actually is learning beyond what machines should. And I think by the end of it is sentient. And that's the whole situation where she's basically like figuring out
that she's actually basically breaking through the fourth wall.
Yeah.
It's almost like that Truman Show scene where he figures it out and then he like hits the edge of the dome. That's basically what she did, but in like a virtual reality situation. She hit the dome and she
and then there was thunder.
Yeah, like this huge sandstorm. Gong Yu shows up looking so handsome in the sand. Her consciousness lives beyond deactivation, and that's the scary part of AI that I think the other movies like The Matrix and 2001 Space Odyssey are trying to warn us about. Mm-hmm. Ex Machina. They're like, hey, these AIs are going to learn to the point where they're going to be smarter than all of us. They're going to learn emotion, and they're going to take it over. And so she's that on the edge of that. But instead of taking over the universe, she just becomes a better mother to her daughter. Finally tells her daughter she's dead. And at that point, I think it's really interesting, the relationship with her and her mom. Because the mom did not want any part of this.
And I could understand, as the mother, having to interact with an AI, one that she didn't subscribe to, and that almost is like arrogant about the circumstance. Yeah. Creating a much more difficult situation for her and her granddaughter and what she has to explain. And also, it's not her daughter that she's speaking to.
Yep.
She can see through the veil, so to speak.
Only when Bai Li's character actually realizes she's dead, does the mother actually soften and be like, oh, you're not my daughter, but you're at least a version of her that I know.
Yeah.
The other version was like a brainwashed version of her that didn't actually live in the reality that they were in. At least this new Bai Li, who's become kind of sentient and knows she's dead, lives in at least in the reality that they all live in. I cried on this. I cried on the last scene here in the airport. It just felt so lonely. Because they set it up where she is in the simulation in the same exact airport that her daughter and mother are in. And they're facing each other, but they're in different worlds, basically. I felt like...
Who was lonely?
I feel like the whole thing is lonely. Yeah. I felt like the whole movie was super lonely. That was another theme I had. It's just, if you watch it, the movie is filled with like vast expanses, right? She chooses a desert as her job.
Yeah.
Pogam is floating in space.
Yeah.
Bae Suzy's apartment, they do like very wide shots of her. It's very empty, you know? She'll sing with her AI robot boyfriend and then turns it off and then she's just by herself.
In quiet.
I mean, she's a flight attendant, right? So she's always in space. The flight Bai Li boards is on Luna Airlines. Everything is just very kind of otherworldly and empty. And I felt that in the movie. Even when they're amongst real people in the real world, all the characters are separated very much by invisible walls. So a lot of the movie happens on screens. But even in person, like Bogum wakes up from his coma and he bonks into a glass window. You know, like there's not anything more
isolating.
Yeah, and also just like on the nose about like, wait, you and I are in person together now, but there's still literally something in between us.
Yeah. So I wonder if the AI part is more a sub-theme and the real theme here is about grief. Mm-hmm. Because each person here is grieving a life that they've lost or a person that they've lost or the things that they couldn't do for the person that they lost. And
how do you manage to it, right?
How do you process that grief?
The project that Bai Li is working on in the desert, she's looking for the tree of life. And I just looked this up. It's a common idea in many cultures throughout the world. It represents the source of life, a force that connects all lives, the cycle of life and death itself. So I think there's this theme of, what is it to live? What does it mean to actually die? And who are you? And what is your consciousness after?
Interesting.
Is it still you?
Yeah.
Are you still living? And it's an interesting question of like, can you ever die?
Or does your spirit live on forever?
Forever.
On the note of the AI becoming sentient, there was a kind of humorous story coming from South Korea about an AI robot that worked as a civil servant for the city council. And it would do all the things like make copies. It would get coffee.
Like an actual robot walking around.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't robot. It was like those robots you see in restaurants, you know, so it looks like a R2-D2.
R2-D2.
It allegedly had committed suicide by falling down a flight of stairs because it was so overworked. And then the AI company was like, oh, no, it probably had a glitch. But the storyline is it was committing suicide because it was so upset about the work it was forced to do.
I mean, look, the suicide rate is so high in South Korea that even the robots are doing it. Oh my gosh. No one is immune. Okay, so would you do this thing? Would you sign up for Wonderland as a person facing death so that you would actually be the AI? And also, would you want a loved one of yours to sign up for Wonderland after their death?
Hmm. I think it's dependent on who it is for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, obviously you as the AI wouldn't have any emotion towards the person who is utilizing you. And so I don't think it matters whether I were to do it or not. But say my kids were young, like mm-hmm. Bailey's kid, and they needed to preserve this memory of me, then I think I would.
Mm-hmm.
If it were my child who had passed before me, God forbid, I may want that because I also would want to access that memory for as long as I could.
I think the grandma grandson storyline kind of shows how dangerous that can be, though, especially when it's children. Yeah. If a child were to die, like, they're cemented in your memory and everything. I think the biggest loss is like, oh, what they could have been, like, right. How could they have grown up and what they would have become, the kind of person they would be. The grandson in that grandma grandson story, he turns out to be kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
And even Chung Yumi's character is like, was he like this before he died?
And what was interesting about that scene where her and Choi Woo-shik's character are reviewing the purchases that the grandma made, they said, oh, the translation was, he's going to become spoiled rotten. But in Korean, what she said was, oh, he's going to break.
Mm.
There is kind of another meaning to saying he's going to break that is like when you're a brat, you're going to be like a messed up kid. So, you know, it's hard to know what she was trying to say. But yeah, if they evolve into one, a person that they weren't before, or, you know, become a teenager and become annoying.
And
you're like, cancel the service.
Yeah, but also it's like that boy got very spoiled by this grieving grandmother. Like, this grandmother, if he was alive, maybe wouldn't have spoiled him the way that she does as a robot. Right. And so did actually her actions just train this boy to be a spoiled brat? Right. And so how much of it, like, do you actually even want to know? Like, do you even want to test like, what could happen, you know?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I've had grandparents pass, but nobody's super, super young and close to me. So I'm not one who is reliable to talk about grief in that kind of way. But I think there is something really, like, tragically beautiful about being able to grieve the memory.
Mm-hmm. You can't move on.
Yeah.
You'll be stuck in this forever. Like, Bae Suzy can't move on. She has the real person in front of her. Mm-hmm. She can't move on. He's not even dead, you know?
Right.
This grandma also can't move on from this grandson's death because she can still, like, feels like she can still do the things for him.
Yeah.
Even though it's not real.
And even, say, by Lee's daughter.
Right. They glossed over that so quickly.
I know.
This poor child is just like, oh, she's gonna be dead?
So traumatized. She's like, oh, yeah, you're dead.
Okay, but you'll still read to me, right? Like, she doesn't even have, like, a sense of, like, who her real mom and her fake mom are.
Yeah, there's so many deep things that they could have delved into. It sounds like they were probably inspired by Black Mirror,
mm-hmm.
which I have not watched.
I've seen a few. San Jacinto, I think, is the one that they reference a lot. And I have seen that one, and it is very close.
It's very close. Yeah. Mm.
So what was your favorite storyline out of all of them?
You know, I actually, they didn't go into this very much, but Chung Yumi's character seems to have lost her parents at a very young age. And I kind of liked it because it was lighthearted. Mm-hmm. You know, they would just, like, check in on her. There wasn't any, like, complication between, you know, her confusing reality with the AI. So I like that storyline.
I thought it was interesting also because she said to Choi Woo-shik later, because they were debating whether to reset Bai Li. Because Bai Li was, you know, Truman showing out of this virtual reality.
So they were trying to shut her down.
Yeah, and Choi Woo-shik's like, let's just reset her. And Chung Yumi says, no, when you reset, they become a different person.
Yes.
And it sounds like she did it to her parents.
Right.
And so it's a little bit of also like, what is this consciousness? And like, what does that mean? Like, so they just unlearned a lot of the things that they've learned as the robot, but aren't they still themselves because they still have all the downloaded, like, essence at death? So I thought that was very curious.
What about you? Who is your favorite?
I'm a sucker for romance, for Melo. I just loved the couple, the young couple. And it was like so K-drama at the end. You know, he's walking away from her. He's crying. You think they're breaking up. You think she's choosing a fake robot over this poor boy. And then she comes running across the field, hugs him from
Beck
behind.
Beck hug. They call it Beck hug.
Beck hug.
AKA back hug.
And I was just like, oh, you know, it's like my K-drama dreams come true, I know. With that scene.
There wasn't a lot of romance in this. So that was that was one throwaway.
Yep. Who was your favorite character?
I think it was the grandma to the spoiled grandson.
Oh, interesting.
I just have a soft spot for her.
I love that you loved her so much and did not recognize her.
I swear, I didn't even like look at her face. That's so ageist.
It's so ageist. You're like, what's even to look at? Oh, only she's like the actress that we just watched for 16 episodes.
I feel like she looked a lot more elderly. And they probably like put a lot more effort to make her look ragged because she was working really hard for her grandson. But I have a soft spot for grandparents. And to see how hard she was working, she was like a very like martyr for her grandson. That was it. It wasn't a very deep reasoning, but what about you?
I actually like the grandma in the Bailey story.
Ah.
Yeah. I think she was an interesting stand-in for the audience to be like, what are you guys all doing?
Yeah. She was such a skeptic.
Yeah. And she's also like, this isn't the real person. Mm-hmm. This is a fake person. And so also the poor grandma is just like stuck with this granddaughter, stuck in Korea because his selfish daughter died, but also just like made her stay here and left her there.
Yeah, I'm so curious what that backstory is. And I think the reason why I thought about it so much at night when I was sleeping was because I was creating narratives because there were so many holes, you know? Yeah.
Truly. I think the grandma in the Bailey story is actually a very famous actress as well.
Oh.
The story had a lot of holes and there was a lot more they could have done to go a little bit deeper. But I did think the acting was quite good. I think everybody really did a good job.
Very convincing. Mm-hmm. I thought the acting was superb. The cast was great. Storyline could have used some work. But overall, like, you know, it still was entertaining.
Yeah. I thought it was a good time. It's worth watching. It doesn't make you feel too much either way.
Although I thought by the end of the desert scene, like when she was breaking into the fourth wall, it was basically a Hyundai commercial in the desert.
I mean, really?
That car. So it was a Hyundai Santa Cruz, which I don't think I've ever seen before. It's a pickup truck, but it looked pretty cool.
And it really gets you through a sandstorm.
I was like, should we get a Santa Cruz? There was one line at the end. Kong Yu said this to Bai Li, and he says, if you think it's real, it is. I guess that was the profound line of the movie.
It could be argued that all of us are saying that to ourselves today. Like you and I are in a simulation right now, yes. And you're just a simulated version of yourself. Right. And so you're probably just hooked up in a bottle of goo somewhere on an alien planet being controlled by the robots. And so, yeah, I believe it's real. I believe you're real.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I think, you know, that pretty much covers it. It was an easy watch. It's nice to see these people all together in a film. I found that to be a great reason to just watch it in general.
Yeah. I watched it a second time and it was an easy to watch film, very good looking characters and great acting. So I would recommend it.
Yeah.
I would say don't expect to be like, this is some Steven Spielberg
masterpiece.
Yeah. But still entertaining.
Yep. Our first movie under our belts. We're just ticking away at different milestones.
The range, guys, the range.
Exactly. We're the Choi Woo-Sheiks of recaps. Next, we're going to pivot again really hard. Back to our roots. We have no idea if the show is going to be good, but we have faith. We are going to try out The Influencer. It's going to be on Netflix. Netflix tells us that 77 elite influencers flaunt their skills to strategically draw the most attention in a high-stakes social survival show. Bring it on. Can't wait.
This is my kind of show.
Yeah, I mean, we may not live in a fake reality, but our faces are staring at screens all day, scrolling through strangers and fake people all day long. And so this will be a nice...
behind the scenes of what's...
I mean, these influencers basically might as well be AI robots, I feel like, right? They're like following an algorithm. That's what's making them famous. And so it'll be really interesting to watch.
Right. It is all a simulation. What are they doing?
Yeah. they're not the real selves, I'll tell you that. So we're going to try that out. Hopefully it's fun. Join us for that. Until then, be well, take care, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye.